Hey everyone, on this show of On.NET, I've got Kyle Marsh with me today, a program manager for Microsoft Identity, and he's here to talk to us about .NET Core Services and MSOL and how to authenticate these against Azure AD. Join us. Welcome back, everyone, on today's On.NET show. I've got Kyle Marsh, Program Manager for the Identity Division, with us, and he's going to talk about MSOL for .NET developers and how to do it when you're writing services. Hey, Kyle. Nice to have you here, man.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
How are you on this sunny day?
Very good. Very good. It's not too hot, so the fans aren't having to go too hard.
Perfect. In this series, we cover different things about identity, and in this instance, you're here to talk to us about MSOL and with regards especially to .NET services. Tell us a little bit about MSOL and what it is.
So MSOL, the Microsoft Authentication Libraries, are a series of libraries that we've created to take away the drudgery, if you will, of implementing protocol level work in order to talk to an identity provider like Microsoft Identity. Mm-hmm. So it's our library, if you will. It's actually not, we don't like to refer to it, this is a protocol library. It does a whole lot more than just that. But it allows you to, a developer with a very minimum amount of code, to really focus on what the developer needs to worry about. Things like, you know, what access do I need? How do I authenticate this user, et cetera? And take away, you know, all of the nitty gritty details that go into these protocols that not only are quite detailed and long, they have a huge amount of work that you have to do to follow the standard, make sure you're up to date with the standard, and so on. So we want to take all of that work away so a developer can focus on their user experience and what they really need to implement with respect to access, et cetera.
Sweet. So I don't have to hand roll my own artisan library to authenticate and talk to Azure AD. I just download the MSOL NuGet package and I'm good to go.
Exactly.
Love it. Simplicity. Now, one important thing, right? MSOL is the new version of a previous library we had. Is that correct?
So yes, we used to have something called the Active Directory Authentication Library, which we referred to as ADAL. The Active Directory Authentication Library was targeted only at users who had corporate identities based off of Azure AD.
Right.
The Microsoft Authentication Libraries isn't just about Azure, but rather an Azure AD. It's about any Microsoft identity. So both users with corporate identities from Azure AD, as well as identities from our consumer side of the house, what we refer to as Microsoft accounts. That could be Outlook.com or Skype.com or Xbox.com, et cetera. So anyone who has a consumer-based identity, we can reach with our MSOL libraries as well. So it's an expansion so that your application with no changes in code, no differences whatsoever, can simply use identities from these other identity providers.
Sweet. And if I remember correctly, we recently announced deprecation or sunsetting of ADAL, right?
We did. There's two things that we are deprecating over the next couple of years. The first thing is the ADAL libraries. So we obviously aren't doing any new work in there. There's no features going on there in ADAL, and that's been the case for quite a while. But we will be deprecating that and wanting developers to move to MSOL. The other thing we're also deprecating is something called the Azure Active Directory Graph. This was a precursor to what we now call Microsoft Graph. Again, the Azure Active Directory Graph was targeted very specifically only at the functionality that's inside of Azure Active Directory, users and groups and apps and those kinds of things. Whereas the Microsoft Graph gives developers access to all of the investment that a company has made to drive their productivity across Microsoft 365. So not only can you get users and groups and apps, you can get mail and calendar information and OneDrive and SharePoint, et cetera. So it's a much broader, much more powerful API than just the focused Azure AD Graph API. So that's also been deprecated, and we're asking developers to move to Microsoft Graph.
Right. You got 2 years, folks. Don't worry. You don't have to start writing your code now, but we give you enough runtime to make sure that you get there on time. And we're going to have Darrell Miller coming to the show as well to talk to us about MS Graph and how you can use it within your applications and all the goodness that is around there. So I download my app and then I can write all different sorts of services, right? That it, and as long as it's .NET, I can use MSAL to speak to Azure AD, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Although our MSAL library is actually go past just .NET. Sure. .NET is obviously our most popular environment, but we see lots of developers using Python or Java or JavaScript or even mobile platforms. And we have .NET libraries for all of those, although obviously services are not appropriate on all of those different environments. But we have MSALs available for the developer, hopefully in the environment they're developing in.
Sweet. Yeah, so multi-language targets. Perfect.
Yes.
And what's special about .NET services?
Well, services, just to talk a little bit about services specifically, the first thing I often want to think about the properties of the application, if you will, that in my mind makes it a service.
Right.
First off, of course, it has to run on a protected environment. I can't be doing this on a phone, regardless of how powerful my phone might be, that allows someone to be able to get at the secrets of these applications. Services work without a user present. They use secrets and confidential information and are more powerful than the ones that can be limited to just a single user. So the application must run in a protected environment. There's never a user in front of it directing a service. The service is being run on its own logic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it always acts on its own behalf. Now, the way that a service identifies itself is it uses something called the client credential grant flow from OAuth. I will point out that lots of services historically have used something called a service account, which doesn't exist. It's really just a user account. Somebody says, I'm going to run this app with it.
Yes.
And it has all of the problems that a username and password has.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, as enterprises try to move into new security models where they don't even have passwords, these kinds of applications, a service app account can be really problematic. So I'd like to warn developers to start thinking about how they will start moving to a client credential flow type of application that we're going to talk about today for their services over time.
And are you going to cover that as part of a, like, you create a specific account, like a service principal with a lockdown set of permissions to be used within a specific app, or are you going
to
have
a different approach? Because I want everyone to move to client credential flow.
Right.
So I'm not going to tell you, here's the steps you should do to do a really good service account, at least not today.
Right.
Today, we're going to hear how to do it the way you should do it, and not the way you might have to do it because of your circumstances.
Right.
So let's just talk about the better path, if you will, right now.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So the next question, of course, is how does a service actually authenticate? And there's an easy answer here. It doesn't. Because the service doesn't need to know who the service is. There's self-awareness, I suppose, right? The service is the service.
The sentient service.
It's right. Well, regardless of how smart or dumb the service itself is, it already knows who it is, right? Because it has its own identity, if you will. So we never give a service an ID token that says, here, service, here's who you are.
Yeah.
Right. So instead, we only give services access tokens, and those are there obviously so that they can call APIs in an authorized way.
Right.
We don't have to worry about any of the intricacies that come in with the other flows, like refresh tokens and authorization codes, because the token endpoint that a service talks to using the client credential flow doesn't require any user interaction. No web surfaces or anything like that. When your access token expires, you just make another call to the endpoint to get another access token. You don't need this whole process of caching refresh tokens and when do they expire and all that stuff. You don't need anything like that.
Right.
So the real question is, how does a service authorize? Well, first off, the service has to be able to say, I am this service. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it provides, if you will, an application identity. Right. So that is two components to that. The first is a client ID. We know who you are based on a client ID. You get that out of your app registration. And then you have to provide your credentials in one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have the support because it's required by the standards to support a secret key, if you will. It's really just a string. It has the same problems as an application, as a password does.
Yeah.
And especially given the nature of these client credential flows. Very nature starts with, I got this string, I'll mail it to the developer, or I'll post it in a spreadsheet somewhere. I actually had a customer one time, here's all the keys we use. It's like, really? This is just a plain text spreadsheet you have of all of the passwords for these services that are very powerful.
So somebody tell them about key vault.
Exactly. So we kind of prefer that you use something like a certificate, because certificate management tends to be better in existence, right? People know how to manage certificates. Whatever process you use, we really want to see where you don't handle the secrets with people. Some automatic process puts the secret in the right place for your process, your service to use, whether it's a certificate that's been, you know, automatically deployed to a VM or something, or even a desktop, a server somewhere. Those are the kinds of processes we want to see for securing these credentials, if you will.
Right.
So, and it's a certificate, there's a specific way you have to do that, involving signing a JWT token, et cetera. The good thing news here is while there's a lot of work there, MSOL looks after for you, so you really don't have to worry about the nitty-gritty details of how you do that certificate authentication. It's very straightforward. That's what we'll show you in a minute.
Right. Awesome.
I will point out that if you're building your services using an Azure resource, like a VM or an Azure function, or a whole long list of supported Azure resources, I have a link there for you. We actually offer something called Managed Identity for Azure Resources. Yeah. That means you as a developer and your IT folks don't have to worry about secrets or keys or certificates or anything else. We handle all of that for you. And in fact, you don't even have to worry about MSOL, because you just make a request to a well-known endpoint. This is from a VM, where I simply ask, hey, Mr. Endpoint, give me a token for Microsoft Graph, and off you go. Right? So you don't even have to do much coding. It's a very straightforward process and a higher security. Now, it is only available today for Azure resources. So if you're running somewhere else, you're running on a server in your enterprise or something like that, you can't use these. But if you are using Azure to host your services, I strongly encourage you to take a look at that as a great way to have a more secure service.
And to interject here, something important is that Mass Identities also work in local development environments. There is a way to add that as part of the development flow, so the inner circle becomes consistent. So when you move from development to production, you don't have to change your code or you don't have to change anything. It just picks up and goes from where it's from, right?
Yeah, we have some client libraries that implement the managed identity for you in your location, and they know how to fall back, which is great.
Nice. Mass Identities. You heard it here first.
So one other thing that the application needs, of course, is the application needs the right to do something, or permission to do its operation. Maybe I want to list all the users in the enterprise, or I want to find out all the mail that was sent yesterday so I can throw it into some complicated ML thing and find out if my company is happy or sad today. Right. I might have all kinds of different needs. So the application has to state, here's what I need to do. Here's what I intend to do.
Right.
So the way it does it, it starts with the API designer, actually, because these are all about getting access to an API. Mm-hmm. So the API designer says, okay, these are my application permissions. So in Microsoft Graph, we have user.read.all. This application can read the full profile of all of the users in my enterprise, for example. Nice. Then the application developer would go to the portal, or possibly use a Graph API to specify for their app at the registration to say, here's the app permissions I require.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they would be listed just like we do with the other ones, user.read.all. Great. That means this application is going to get that application permission. Remember, it's just nothing to do with the user now. It's the application, and therefore all users can be read because it's not a specific user associated with the app.
Right.
Then the tenant admin actually has to grant the permissions ahead of time. There's no UI here. There's nothing the user gets to see because there's no user anyway. Right. So all of the granting saying, yes, I'm allowing this service to read my mail or read my users or look at my PowerPoint, my SharePoint, what have you. That's all done ahead of time by the tenant admin. Again, they can use an API. They usually use the portal. But they go ahead and create that. They effectively grant the permission to the application ahead of time. And then the application always uses what we refer to as the .default scope. So, for example, if my application has been granted some permissions to Microsoft Graph, it uses graph.com/.default. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I don't ask for the scopes one by one. I just say default, and then it's the operation that looks after that, right?
Yeah, I kind of like to think of the .default. I can use this for any application. It kind of says, Why don't you go to the to my app registration and do what I would refer to as the scope or permission math. Figure out what I need based on what I'm calling, and maybe I'm calling an API that needs another permission, et cetera. Go ahead and figure that, all that out for me and give me what I need.
So would you call that efficiency or laziness? Like, as a developer, do I want to put my scopes in my app and then call them? I mean, if I'm not writing a service, for example, let's say I'm creating a web app, or do I go with default all the time? Because people may be asking that.
It would depend upon the nature of you, the user experience you're going for. So it becomes a tool in the developer's pocket for how am I driving my user experience. Now, if I'm a line of business developer whose scopes are always pre-consented by my tenant admin anyway, I might as well use .default. Right. If I'm a multi-tenant application developer, I'm selling my app across different tenants, maybe I want to be able to have different tiers of the app. So maybe I have an app that only needs these three permissions for a big chunk of it, and maybe it only needs these other three in particular circumstances. And who knows? Maybe that this particular customer never even bought those other three. So by using the what we call dynamic scopes or dynamic permissions, in conjunction often with incremental. So dynamic says, I'm going to tell you the permissions I need, regardless of what I've told you I might use in my app registration. This is what I need right now. And maybe that's the only thing I sold to the developer. So that's why a developer is not so much for a service, because a service is kind of all, nobody's looking at a UI. What's the user experience for a server? Well, there isn't one. So I don't really need to optimize it much. Yeah. But if I'm a user in front of it and I'm using what we call delegated permissions, I might want to really fine tune exactly when the user gets prompted for permissions. Gotcha. So for example, maybe I have an application that says I'm helping you manage OneDrive. And the first thing to do if the app started up and says, I'd like to write to your calendar, you'd go, oh, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. But if at some point in time I pop a note to the user saying, hey, I noticed that X number of your files have been not touched in a year. Do you want me to set a reminder to have you come and clean up these so I can help you clean them up? Sure, go ahead and set the reminder. Hey, can I write to your calendar? That would be a way you would want to do that.
Very nice. Thank you.
Okay, so let's take a quick look at a demo of how I might implement a service. I'm going to use a .NET Core application here. That the links in the slide show you where I got both the tutorial and the code here from. It's right out of our samples and our tutorials. So obviously, we usually do this kind of a demo with a secret key, which I just told you a few minutes ago you don't really want to use. So let me try to do this in a little bit more correct way. So the code we're going to run through in this case is, obviously, I need to read the certificate. I'm running this on my local machine as a console app here on my local machine. So I've already distributed, if you will, this certificate to to my machine here. So I just need to go and get my certificate out of certificate storage. And then I'm going to pass that to this confidential client. So we're building a confidential client, which is using the client credential flow. Right. So I'm saying I have a service. It's a confidential client, respect in the way we enable things here in MSOL. So here I'm instantiating my MSOL application by saying I want to create it. Here's my identifier for the application. Again, I need to know the app's name, if you will, by this client ID. Okay. Here's my certificate that you're going to use to properly tell Microsoft Identity who this application is by doing this complicated signing a JOT thing. And then this is just which tenant I'm talking to. So in this case, I'm talking to the tenant where the app is registered. The only other thing I'm going to do is we've gone ahead in our configuration here. I've said which my application, the app I'm calling is Microsoft Graph. This identifies the tenant. Then I identify the client ID. So we're getting this all just out of a configuration. And there's the name of the cert I'm using that we got out of my certificate store.
Very nice.
So, what we're going to do here is we're just going to take that app URL, the API URL, which in this case was graph.microsoft.com, and we're going to add that .default, which is what we would always do for a service.
Yep.
And then it becomes a very straightforward process. I simply, and I'm going to use this acquire token for client. It's going to build me an object that I can then execute asynchronously that's going to return to me the response, the token response. I'm going to take a a quick look at that when we get there. So actually, let's wait for that. We'll go here. But I go ahead and now I'm going to go acquire that. And then from there on, all I really need to do is call my APIs and give it the access token, which is in the response. So let's look here. I'm calling an API. What that really means is I'm going to create an authorization header. And that authorization header is going to have this value of a bearer with the access token.
Sweet.
Right. So I pass that access token that I got from Microsoft Identity to call the API.
And
if I call this this API, it knows how to check to see if it's. So what MSOL is coming in for me, MSOL is basically got these two APIs. The first off, I'm creating the MSOL object.
Yeah.
I call that an API, sort of not. And the second one is this acquire token for client. That's all I really need from MSOL. The rest of it's MSOL is going to handle for me.
But this one hides a lot of complexity behind the scenes. So these five lines or four lines of code hide a lot of code, boilerplate code that otherwise you would have to roll out yourself, and you don't want to do that.
Right. If I was doing this at the protocol level, I'd be off trying to figure out how to create a JOT and how to sign a JOT. And then I have to go through the actual flow of the client credential. There's a bunch of work I'd have to do, which obviously, I don't want to do.
No, it's just the five lines of code I want to use. Perfect.
That's right. Exactly. So let's go ahead and run the app. And let me make sure it's not popping up on the other monitor. So I actually didn't want to check. Oh, so this is just checking, I'm getting my certificate. So I got my certificate. That worked fine. So I'll just go ahead and let that go. So now I've gone ahead and acquired a token. What I want to look at here is the result, just to show you what this is really. If you were looking for, how do I debug? I'm getting a an access denied from my, popped up on my other monitor. Let me bring it over here. So I'm getting an access denied. How do I do it? Well, the first response for most developers is, oh, I'm just going to take a look at the token. Surely it's just a JOT token. I can just look at it. Even though you can do that, I'm going to try to discourage people from doing that, because if you do, there may be a point in time where you will no longer be able to read the access tokens like you can today. So if we start putting protection on those access tokens, that debugging technique you've gotten so used to won't be there anymore. So instead, I look at the token response, there's my scopes, and I can see that what I got was exactly what I asked for. graph.microsoft.com/default. So that's really telling me, if you want to see if your permissions are right, go look in the portal, because that's where they are.
Right.
And here you can see the rest of the information that I see in the token response. I'll also point out the correlation ID, really important to log. If you want to log anything, log this. Because with the correlation ID, our support people go and look up that transaction. With the, hey, I ran an app 2 days ago and it didn't work, could you tell me what happened? We don't really do well tracing those down, but with a correlation ID, we do that great. And that's not in the access token or anywhere else. It's right here in the correlation ID of the response, as well as things like when it expires and so on. So I have no need to ever look inside this access token. This access token was issued for Microsoft Graph. They're the only people who should be looking inside of it. The information I need as a developer, both to run, like if I'm, say, how long should I attach the token for? Well, here's where it expires. Or to debug, here's the scopes it got. Here's the correlation ID if I need to open a case. All of that comes in the token response.
Very nice.
I just wanted to point that out. Now we'll go ahead and continue. Let me go and grab the app. All it did was it called our user API for Microsoft Graph. Here I have a list of current users. And look, Christos is actually in my tenant. I don't know what he's doing.
Oh, wow.
Second day on the job. Hey, do you have a tenant I can use? It's still there.
It's still there.
What the heck? In any case, I guess we'll let that slide.
I don't have much of power there.
That's right. You're just a user in the test tenant.
Just a user.
That's a very quick look at it's not a lot of code. That's the great thing. Even though I talked a lot about things like services and properties, I ended up with two API calls. Create me a confidential client app from MSOL, and MSOL, get me a token for this app now. That's all I had to do.
Yeah, I think there was more code to actually retrieve the certificate or to actually do the call to the graph rather than authenticating and getting the access token to do these things, which is great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just to sum up, a service, of course, needs to run in a secure environment. So if you use something like msol.net and try to use to say, oh, I'm just going to put a service on my iPhone, yeah, mm-hmm. we're not going to let that happen. So we prevent confidential clients on things like mobile devices, single-page web apps, and even UWPs. What you do need to do is you have to authorize via your required credentials. Again, if possible, use Manage Identity for Azure Resources. It's a lot simpler and more secure. Or a certificate, preferably, because there's usually management around a certificate. And then the fallback would be secrets. But we really, really, really hope that you have some management process in place so that those secrets aren't just strings that are passed around in email or spreadsheets on a server or checked into GitHub. And we see those as well. And then finally, of course, a service uses application permissions. So you do that in the portal, and that's how you get your application set up.
Awesome. So much goodness here, especially for developers that work with .NET and .NET Core. And these days, you know, you can run on Linux or Windows, doesn't really matter. So it's open source. There's a lot of potential there for people to create background tasks using .NET Core. And it's nice to know how to do it right and securely and not expose unnecessary secrets and stuff to your to potential attackers. So, Kyle, that was brilliant. Thank you very much for coming to the show and explaining what secrets are and what services and how to be used in .NET Core with Azure AD. So I appreciate your time. Thank you again.
Okay. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Have a nice day, everyone.